Broadcasting from a device built by a teenage genius using leftover parts from an Erector set, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
The mid-season finale of Sleepy Hollow has Sci-Fi for Chicks pondering morals and faith in this episode, Daddy Issues.
If we do nothing, we all die.
Our world is merging with purgatory. All bets are on.
I will lay down my soul to stop this apocalypse.
Are you willing to lay down your sons?
Do you know how many people have gotten burned claiming the end is nigh?
It's hailing blood. You know what you have to do.
Enough deceit!
If the end is upon us, are we too late?
Or Alex issues, as the case may be. Warning to all of you listeners out there, Alex may, air quotes on that may, have feels in this one. Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. My name is Heather, and I'm joined by my unwilling witness, Alex. Hi, Alex.
Go away.
You might hear some hesitation in my voice because I know about the impending doom. Everybody on the show is worried about the end of days. I'm worried about Alex's feels when we get to a certain point in the story. Now, without going into the story too much, this is our mid-season finale. We have 7 more episodes when we come back sometime, I'm guessing late January, early February. We don't have a return date yet. After the events of last episode, where we had Abby and Crane getting the sword, with Katrina back with Moloch. Oh, she's having fun thinking about Abe tied up. Katrina back with Moloch and Henry, and about to be sacrificed. And this episode that we were both like, this felt like a mid-season finale. What are they doing? And we have this trepidation for this episode, which I have trepidation for this episode, but not for the show itself, just for our show. Alex, did this feel like a mid-season finale? Don't go into the story too much.
No,
did it feel like a mid-season finale?
Grudgingly, and really, you know, grudgingly admit that while last week we wondered how are they going to beat it, you know, that mid-season big finale that last week felt like. Well, they managed. I gotta say, you know, You have to give them some unwilling respect. And see how objective I am. I am capable of admitting that this was a good episode overall. And they did know how to raise the stakes even more. And leave us on a note that would be okay. How did this happen? What is going on? And what do you mean we have to wait? They took this tension that was so obvious last week, and they just kept adding to it and kept adding to it. And even when the episode had its slower moments, there was still incredible tension present there. And they didn't let go, not even at the end. Basically, so we are left hanging with what just happened? Give me another episode, like stat, and see, I am capable of objective analyzing and everything, and I'm being nice before I
She's capable of spurts of objectivity.
that too,
spurts. So now that we've talked about the mid-season finale, thank you so much for joining us here on Sci-Fi for Chicks. We'll see you next year. We're not going to get away with that. Did it feel like a mid-season finale to you, listeners? Let us know. I'm getting this in before you get going. Let us know on our Twitter feed at Sci-Fi for Chicks. Of course, you're subscribing to us on iTunes, Sci-Fi for Chicks, because we do have our own feed, and we're going to be doing a mid-season recap, look back at the first season and the first half of this season, so Alex can have more feels and more rants. So you, of course, want to subscribe to us so that you don't miss that episode, or when we do come back for episode 12. And you can also let us know your feels, sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi4me.com, or on our hotline, 573-42-SCI-FI. That's 573-427-2434. Yeah, I had to get that in now because I don't know if I'll get it in at the end. Let's go ahead and get in the episode and start with some of the quote-unquote happier things, our first tree to fall, which is the lightning, we, of course, a hallmark of Sleepy Hollow is starting with something that kind of is a little disarming, a little of that fish out of water, but not so blatantly, I don't understand what's going on. I do like that they've moved Crane into this, yeah, I get what technology is, I just don't always like it.
Yeah.
So we start with him not trusting the electric device, and this was one time when I'm like, Abby, I think you should listen to the man.
According to this map, Frederick's Manor is approximately...
Exactly 6.2 miles away. I told you I have a GPS.
Forgive me for not trusting an electronic device during an apocalyptic storm.
You really think this is it? End of days.
Moloch has risen. He sounded the trumpet. Very little remains between now and his earthly reign.
There's Katrina, us, and a sword.
That is assuming she can hold him off until we arrive. The end is upon us. His use for her has likely passed.
We just need a few more minutes.
Just saying. I don't know. I was too busy noticing that out of his time or not, Ichabod Crane is such a guy. I mean, give him 5 minutes on a motorbike and he's like, oh my god, I need this in my life. It was such a guy reaction that I was so completely disarmed and was just, yeah, let's play this again. And I was rewind and let's rewind again. And it was so precious.
We've got to get over there, Crane.
Lieutenant.
Motorcycle. No electronics, just good old-fashioned machinery.
If ever there were justification to commandeer a vehicle, the apocalypse would be it.
Hop on and hold on.
Right. Where do I buckle?
Arms around me.
But, of course, but where do I buckle?
No buckle. Normally wear a helmet, but again, you get a buy when it's the end of days.
And perhaps there's a stable nearby.
Don't worry. I had a bike when I was a teenager.
Yes, from the where do I buckle?
Yeah.
He was being very responsible that you're supposed to buckle up to getting off and having that. And well, and also right after he buckled, I was like, well, maybe there's a stable. I'll just default to a horse. But that look of, yes, pure man joy of
yeah.
going, I want.
I know we have an apocalypse right now to deal with, and I'm responsible enough to wait. But the moment we're done with the end of the world, I'm getting one of
exactly.
those. It was a week about... This was just such a guy. You just gotta, you know, respect what effect motorbikes have on them. It's just like a puppy.
He's our little puppy. I did really like that disarming moment. It almost made me forget some of the more technical scientific things. Yeah, if the lightning's knocking out the electricity, why, number one, is it only knocking out their car or wherever they are? I kind of was thinking about how in there's a show called The Returned, a French show, zombie, undead-ish like kind of thing. But when the electricity gets knocked out there, it's the whole town. And so it's kind of really imposing. This is just almost like following them around. And then, of course, the fact that, yeah, you know, it might be an older motorcycle, but I'm sure there's still a battery. Forgive me, anybody out there, if you know motorcycle mechanics better than I and you want to tell me how wrong I am on this, but there should be a battery to get the whole thing started.
Spark plug at least, you know, so
yeah,
that when you turn
yeah.
on
well,
the ignition, it actually does something.
Yeah, so you should have some sort of electrical something or other that should have been affected by that. So
yeah.
I will get Crane's, you know, forgive me for not trusting this electricity during the apocalypse, you know, apocalyptic storm that he was saying. And then the whole to, I want one of these when this is over. Yeah, I'll look past our first tree anomaly there.
Oh, come on.
It only affects the electricity that furthers our plot points.
Yeah, come on. It's Sleepy Hollow. This is something you just accept and move on because it's not the first time this happened. This show isn't exactly...
Can I quote you on this later on in the episode that it's just something you have to accept and move on?
No.
Can I quote you?
No, I might play that back. Because I will not, you will not be referring to little plot holes and missteps and writers just being, whatever, nobody's going to notice it. Because look, Ichabod is being adorable. Because that will not apply. I'm just saying.
So that gets them back to the Frederick Manor.
I think it's a mansion.
The mansion there. And we finally get to see the little tiny town again. Little teeny tiny town. He's so cute. And it takes them all of 3.5 seconds to determine that there's a pentagram.
Which, over, by the way, if you use 5 points, if you draw 5 dots on a map or a piece of paper in a slightly circular manner, right? Because that's what that is. It only shows a pentagram if you want it to show a pentagram. Because normal people would not see a pentagram when looking at 5 dots. I'm just saying.
Well, normal. Normal is the key word that you have right there on that whole thing. And maybe it's how they're looking. They gazed into the abyss. And the abyss is gazing back. They're turning into those same monsters that they're hunting now. So that's what they see.
Basically, they are seeing what they need to see. Or what they want to see. Which might not be there, but yeah, let's go with that. Because technically, if it was a pentagram and actually had a purpose, then what would be inside of this pentagram, like in the very middle, would be important. Because that's how it works. In, you know, other mystical TV shows, usually, sometimes. But, I don't know, those trees were, like, all the way over there, completely unconnected to the pentagram, so, yeah.
Yeah, was there something, because it's been a few days since I've watched this. Was there anything, because that's what I was thinking, too, that where they needed to go was in the center. Yeah,
the center of town, or the center of this pentagram, and nope. No, the trees are in the forest, and the forest is not in the city center or town center. Mm-hmm. So this pentagram was like, oh yeah, and we're going to put a pentagram here because that's scary and mystical, and it served absolutely no purpose to the plot. Unless they, you know, use it in the next 7 episodes. It can happen, you know. I can wait. Because I know that no matter what, you will force me to watch those 7 episodes.
We have Hottie. We have Hottie coming back, so at least that's
and
the carrot.
And he better be shirtless.
I'm dangling
soon,
the Hottie carrot.
Because I'm going to need a lot of shirtless men to, you know, make it better.
This isn't the CW. This isn't the CW.
I know. And let's just say, right now, it's counting against them. Because if it was a CW show and Hottie was shirtless while, you know, making out with those two girls at that bar, I would be more willing to allow them other things. Because, you know, I can forgive you anything given you're attractive enough and are naked often enough.
Well, we do have them moving into the whole thing with Headless. Mm. And the binding ritual, and we have our...
That was the best pun ever.
It was that moment when Katrina is supposed to, which this I kind of rolled my eyes at, because I'm like, oh, this is one of those easy things, but at least you're acknowledging it's easy. Okay, translate for me, Katrina, what he says. It's like, here, let me extend the charm so that everybody can see him.
It allowed us to see Abraham. I miss the guy. I like seeing him, you know, with his head.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
I did like, well, I mean, it was a good battle. It was another good battle between Crane and Headless.
Yeah, but the axe. And the axe. What did you do, Ichabod?
The axe?
The axe. He broke it. It was such a good
I
axe.
Love that. I thought that was great. I think, you know, it's like that's when I think Headless, because I think Headless had this confidence that you know, Crane's never going to get the best of me, and suddenly his big weapon, sorry, not so much, and I love him saying, tell us where Moloch is or you'll die. And yeah. I'm like, well, he kind of already is.
I have to tell you, okay, so it was a good battle and it was a good moment battle-wise, you know, Headless losing the axe. But I liked that axe. It was so powerful and so, you know, awesome, and nothing could, you know, stand against it. Nothing stood a chance against that axe. It was on my list for
except
Christmas
the sword
presents,
of Methuselah.
Except, apparently, for the sword that lights up and has runes on it. Yeah. But I gotta say, I liked that the only person that it wasn't so easy to use that sword. I mean, they said through the episode that the sword just guides you and does the work for you, so no fencing experience required. But I liked the price for
killing.
Well,
that gets into another trope that's used and another plot that's used in so many different things is, you know, you've seen on Charmed, you've seen on Once Upon a Time, you've seen on Fill in the Blank, so many things that all magic has a price.
Yeah.
And I like that there was this, Headless had this moment of self-preservation that you kind of wouldn't expect, I think, from one of the horsemen of the apocalypse, of telling them that to save his life, but also almost helping them on that side, but not realizing that he's helping them. You know, it's like, if you use this to kill, you're gone. You're dead too. But it also saved his life. So, but we do have that all magic has a price.
Yeah, but didn't it make you wonder for a second? Because Methuselah killed 1,000 demons with it, right? Mm-hmm. So clearly he didn't die the first time he killed with it. So at which point did the sword decided? Because it had to decide as a magical, you know, artifact that, yeah, this killing demons stuff isn't fun enough. Let's kill the whoever wields the sword as well, because that's going to be fun. So I don't know. The myth behind the sword, I liked it better last week when it was, you know, somebody killed 1,000 demons with it and now it's like the most awesome thing ever. And once they started to add to the mythology of this artifact, it was like, yeah, but when did it happen? Why did it start to take souls of people who killed with it? What? I don't know, I'm confused, and explain this to me. You or the writers, whoever, I just don't understand the way, you know, the sword suddenly started to work differently than, you know, when Methuselah started to wield it. I don't know. I'm confused.
I'm not sure on that one. I am not a big biblical scholar. So I have to admit, I can't.
But didn't it make you wonder why suddenly, hey, you shouldn't kill with it because it's going to kill you too? Since when? I am putting my anger onto the sword because I cannot be angry with everybody else. So I gotta blame somebody and it's the sword.
Well, don't blame the sword. It was such a pretty little sword there.
Yeah, but... Ah.
And by the way, people, this is not her rant. This is not even the beginning of her rant.
No, I am containing myself. I am in awe of the self-control I am, you know, showing right now. So you should be in awe as well.
Well, I guess maybe I just took it because of that whole trope of magic has a price. Mm. Maybe I just took that and kind of overlooked it, kind of like how I overlooked the lightning thing because of Crane's cuteness there with the motorcycle.
Yeah.
That's all I can think of on that one. And I mean, for me, it was a good out for us not to kill Abraham, at least also to give a pause with Katrina again, showing her very blurry lined ties to Abe and to Ichabod and to everything. You know, it has Crane giving her these looks and it setting up for what we have later, the kind of break that we have between them. Mm-hmm. And seeing that, you know, she wasn't just doing this out of Crane, wait, it could kill you. It did feel like she was also almost trying to save Abe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it did.
It really did to me. So that you really do think, well, what are your ties? What are your connections? And it builds on their connection that they had from 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was more than just this passing fancy, that maybe kind of building on what we talked about a couple episodes ago or last episode, it's all blurring together at this point, mm-hmm. where maybe the story that we're being told by Crane is his truth, but not the facts. Yeah. That, you know, maybe there was something more there and maybe he did actually steal her away more than he's tending to think, and that there was a tie there more than just they were promised to each other. So it did kind of lend to that, because she is definitely favoring him. I don't know if it's the mystical charm that she has that enables her to see him or what.
I have to say, I like the way they are carrying this particular storyline with Katrina, Abraham, and Ichabod. Because mm-hmm. they aren't going with the most obvious choices that I'm used to on other TV shows when it comes to love triangles and, you know, stuff. Because it's never simple and it's never clear-cut. And emotions are confusing. And let's face it, Katrina, before Ichabod came into her life for, like, more permanently, there had to be something between her and Abraham, because she was going to marry him at some point, right?
Right.
And I don't believe that kind of feelings really completely leave you, unless, you know, it's a terrible divorce and you want to kill each other, but it's not the case with Abraham and Katrina. So I think it doesn't really maybe she doesn't love Abraham anymore, because she loves Ichabod. Maybe she loves them both and just is extremely confused and, you know, unable to pick a side, or, you know, let Ichabod just kill Abraham. I don't know, but I like it, adds some depth, even though it's one of the tropes that is also very common in TV shows. But it adds something to her and her relationship with both Ichabod and Abraham. I mean, the confrontation between Katrina and Ichabod in this episode, it was coming, and you knew it was coming since episode one this season, that they yeah. would have to confront the doubts, the feelings, Ichabod would have to finally address the feelings of betrayal that he experienced numerous times since mm-hmm. this whole magical, mystical destiny happened.
And her too, because she has had her share, like that in that first episode, seeing Ichabod do so much to save Abby from purgatory,
yeah.
and that hug that they had in the church, you know, she started with those too. I think they've really fleshed it out, because in season one, Crane and Katrina are those destined lovers. Yeah. They're supposed to be together.
The ideal,
the true love
relationship that you put
exactly.
on the
pedestal. And this one, this season, they've really put in those faults, those flaws, mm-hmm. those stumbling blocks. And I think we're finally at a point in the story where Katrina, for me, is having more depth and more humanity, and it's believable. You know, it's not that Abraham did something so evil and dastardly that she left him and went to Crane. Obviously, it was just more of a pull over to Crane, more yeah. of a romantic love. So she does still have a tie there. It's not like she's a robot and is just, well, okay, I'm with him now, so no more with you, which I would then almost question if I were Ichabod,
yeah.
that she could turn off her emotions that much. And it shows she has that grayness, that duality, which shows in her feelings for her son, for her former fiance, for Crane, for Abby, for everybody. She's really seeing things more gray, whereas Abby is definitely black or white.
Yeah.
It's light or dark. There's not so much middle ground, which we had as once they realize that the sword is going to take the soul, which first they were saying the life, but then they kind of made it over into the soul of whoever kills with it. And so they're thinking, okay, well, you know, then we have to die, which I have to admit that Jenny looked a little concerned at first. And then Jenny has, I don't know if we're going to get into this now. Oh, I don't know if I want to bring this up or if I just want to skip over it.
Well, before you do, I want to talk about Katrina some more because I have one final thing. Yeah, bullet dodged just yet. But I there is one thing that I wanted to talk about Katrina before we go to the do the dark stuff. And it's whole season I knew this confrontation between her and Ichabod was coming, and I knew it, and I at the same time I was afraid that when the writers finally decide to do it, it's going to feel like a scene they added to a bigger plot, and it would either feel like a cheat, or it would feel like it didn't fit into the grand scheme of things and into the way the episode played. And that was my biggest fear as far as the confrontation was supposed to go. So when I saw that, oh, they were going for it. Like, this is it. This is it. Hello. You know, sound the alarm. It's happening. I was like, please do it right. And then I realized there was no other moment they could have done it. Because when you know you're going into battle, and this has been proven over and over and over in TV shows and everything else, with the chance that you're going to die, everything else, every little thing that annoys you, frustrates you about the other person that you feel strongly about, is going to come out. So there was no other possible moment for Ichabod and Katrina, who feel strongly about each other. Think whatever you want, you know, call it love, destiny, or whatever it is. They feel strongly about each other. And it had to happen now, so they could not only acknowledge that they have a problem. I like the way they decided to push that argument, because they need to be soldiers now.
I wonder if they're going to deal with it before or after Crane gets his motorcycle.
Yeah.
Along those same lines, they didn't just drop that scene later on into the story. They did actually build up to it, so I'm going to sidestep the scary part here for a few moments more. They started asking, you know, Crane, are you going to be able to do this?
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to kill your son if it comes to it? And that was that whole scene that we teased last week with I would be, you know, I'd lay down my soul, I'd lay down my life for this. And they're like, but would you lay down your son's? And he's able to come back and say, if it is what it takes, yes, I will. Which playing into the whole Akita thing is very much that Abraham and Isaac kind of thing. Side note, Abraham and Isaac, headless is Abraham. Don't know if it'll play anywhere, but just, you know, kind of struck me. They then asked that same question basically to Kat. And her saying that she actually came out. I was proud of her for saying this. That no, she couldn't. That he's still her son.
I like the way she said it. What kind of mother would I be if I didn't try? That struck a chord with me, even though I'm not a mother. But oh my God, that
and
was so true.
And you have a black
true.
Heart. Yeah.
Yeah, that was so true and so believable. I know I whined and complained about them being obsessed with let's save our son, you know, because oh my God, enough already. He's evil. Let's
you
kill him.
Know.
Yeah, yeah. This doesn't sound like something I would say. I know.
Not at all.
But when she said that, it was like, fine, okay, I get it. I buy it. I will buy into this. Because there was so... It was a powerful moment for me, basically. Which, you know, is weird and I will never do it again, but... It was believable.
I'm interested to see if fandom is thinking any differently about Katrina than even just a few episodes ago when we were even ranting about her, this wheel that she was on, where she just kept ending back in the same place and saying the same things and doing the same things. Her motivation seems different, even though it's not too different. It's skewed just a little bit more, where her story is much more interesting and compelling, I think. Well, and the fact that she actually knew Jeremy. I can't remember how long she knew him, but she did know Jeremy as Jeremy.
Yeah.
Whereas Crane
only knows Henry.
Never knew Jeremy. Yeah, he only knows Henry. And he's been betrayed by Henry.
Mm.
You know, we have that whole thing where last season, Henry's on their side. He's a sin eater, and he's helping us with this. And then suddenly, guess what? Not so much. Mask is off. I'm tying you both to a tree. Now I'm putting you in the ground, and I'm giving Mom to Headless, and I'm a servant of Moloch, he's my new father.
Well, frankly, I hope that the fandom sees Katrina differently and embraces Katrina at least a little bit, because she has come a long way. Her is one of the character developments of this show that I'm most impressed by, because while I have to objectively believe and acknowledge that maybe she didn't change all that much between season one and season two, but we know so much more about her now, and that adds layer upon layer upon layer to her character and to her actions and everything, that it would be such a waste if fandom didn't, you know, at least grudgingly admit that she is an amazing character.
Mm-hmm.
So I know fandoms usually, in general, are treating female characters with less love and devotion than the male characters. But with Sleepy Hollow, we have so many amazing female characters that I want to believe that the Sleepy Hollow fandom will see the greatness that Katrina is capable of, as far as, you know, the character and the way she's handling things. So, yes, please do this for me.
Kind of what we talked about. Kind of what we talked about in our Gotham mid-season finale podcast, where we were liking the fact that Bruce and Kat and Alfred's characters had this slow burn to get us to this point, instead of just bam in your face. I'm really starting to see the payoff with Katrina in this really long, long, slow burn that she's had to get us to a point where she's not just like, oh, here's a Katrina scene. We'll just, let's talk about it real quick and then get to the fun stuff. She's really starting to show more of that depth. And like you said, it's not that she's changing much, but those windows are opening wider. Those doors are opening wider to what she already is. And that moment, when she was saying, what kind of mother would I be if I didn't try, was a fabulous moment for her. Countered by, I really did also like Crane saying, when he's talking about the whole Abraham and Isaac thing, he's saying that he will do this, but everybody, you know, acknowledge Abby, that this is an unreasonable request to ask of me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though I'm going to do it, realize that this is an unreasonable request. It's like he needs that validation.
Mm-hmm.
While Katrina's saying, I'm not going to do it because I have to try to save my son, he's saying, I will, but I want all of you to know
that
how hard this is going to be for me. Yeah, exactly. Which is an interesting, different take on it, because she doesn't like that she's going against what may need to happen for this, for to prevent the apocalypse and such, but she has to try. So she's getting very personal, and he's getting personal in a different way, saying, I have to do something very personal and horrid for the greater good.
I think what was important to him in that scene was that other people, and Abby in particular, I felt, acknowledge the sacrifice he would be making.
Mm-hmm.
Because for everybody else in that church, well, except Katrina, of course, but for everybody else involved in the fight, it was a way to fight the evil, right? They, maybe intellectually, they knew that Henry was Ichabod's and Katrina's son, but it didn't really connect for them. For Abby, it was Henry. Mm-hmm. Henry was trying to raise hell on earth, and she knew, you know, deep down, he was Ichabod's son, but she saw him as Henry, the horseman of war, first. And I felt right. like it was important to Ichabod that she see Henry as Ichabod's son and realize, like, truly realize what it would do to Ichabod to kill him. Even if, you know, the mm-hmm. Sword of Methuselah didn't kill Ichabod immediately after. That
right.
he just needed her to know because, well, they are witnesses, so they're in it together. And Abby, can you see, please see how difficult it's going to be? And it would be like, I don't know, Abby killing Jenny or killing her own mother. But he needed her to see that. And I was really impressed with the way that scene played out. It was all about sacrifices and, you know, different perspective on what was going to happen.
Which I think is an interesting point to bring up, that he needed that validation, that somebody to see
that he's what not is the unreasonable he was going to make. Having difficulty with it.
Right. But Katrina, she didn't really need to. She didn't need this validation from everybody else. She just had that inner, I don't want to call it strength, but that inner feeling that this was what she had to do. She didn't need that outside validation. She was telling them, I can't do it and this is why, but she wasn't asking anybody almost for their permission, mm-hmm. for their blessing, for their whatever of what her decision was. It seemed Crane actually was.
Yeah, I feel there was some certainty that Katrina had that Ichabod mm-hmm. lacked in a way. And it wasn't necessarily a bad thing, right? That he needed that validation and she didn't. Maybe it was because of those years that she had with Jeremy, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it was certainly an interesting way to, you know, face the issue, basically. Plus, you know, I think it added to her character. Like, we talked about it two episodes ago, when she wanted to kill Moloch on her own, when he was mm-hmm. it was still a child, and how she was a strong female character, but still lost. Right?
Right.
And I think in this episode, the way she had the certainty, no, I can't do this and this is why, it just added to to her inner strength. Because nothing would make her waver in her, you know, decision now that, you know,
right.
everything was coming to an end. And Ichabod was still, you know, maybe I won't have to do it, but I will if I have to. Only, you know, it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, if I'm pushed into that corner, I'll do it. And it does bring up an interesting kind of twist on the story, because I want to play a clip here that's really talking about the redemption and the struggle that they're having and between characters. Because I think John Noble brings up a really important part about Henry's character that'll play into our discussion later on. But since it is we are talking about the struggle that Crane and that Katrina are both having with this, I think this is a good point. So take a listen to what some of the actors were saying about this struggle.
Do you know, to play a character that has no hope of redemption is not very interesting. Katrina and Ichabod continue to believe, as parents do, that there must be something redeeming in this boy of theirs. It must be something, despite all of his actions.
What kind of a mother would I be if I didn't at least attempt to save him?
It's her son, you know, motherly instincts, you know. She's never going to let go of that. She's always going to fight for him. So in that sense, I think she has a little bit of a stronger bond to him than Ichabod. He obviously also wants to save him, but when it comes to it, will he? It's causing a rift between Katrina and Ichabod and Katrina and Abby and Ichabod as well.
I need to know that if your son interferes with us killing Malik, you'll be able to use this sword against him. You must be able to kill Henry.
The fundamental difference between Katrina and Abby is their approach to Henry. It can't be, do I go with my partner or do I go with my wife? It has to be, which is the most logical, sensible road to go down? And the question is, will Ichabod be able to aim the sword at his son?
Together, we will raise hell on earth.
He's not completely lost soul. Come on, someone help him. That's what we're hoping for anyway.
We are back. I really liked that clip. I thought it had some really good stuff on Henry that I want to talk about in a little bit. But I think it did kind of show some of that insight into the characters, the actors actually feeling what the characters are, the tension that's building. Like you were saying, what ends with Katrina and Crane saying, you know, let's just agree to be soldiers right now.
Mm.
We're not married right now. We're soldiers. And how Abby's looking at Katrina and Crane and what's going to happen. And in a way, I think it helped bring them all together more so that they could be the soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
One little side note that I do like there is they did bring in a history thing that I brought up before with Andre's capture at Tarrytown, the fort there, which is the actual history way back when with Benedict Arnold that we had in one of the earlier episodes when Andre was the one that was captured and all that. So if you missed that little Andre capture history moment, that was part of the whole Benedict Arnold story there. Before we get into your rant, because I do want to get there, let's go ahead and do a happy thing and get out of the way our few second little clippy here, moving into our next tree, of Hottie.
Mm.
We had Hottie come back briefly into this, obviously setting up for when we come back. This was not his episode to shine at all. It was just him, another shout out there,
yeah.
His whole little God bless Texas. I'm like, I knew I liked you, Hottie. I knew I liked you. But it's time to weapon up, so we need to go see Hottie.
Mm.
Was that a nice little moment for you?
It was. And not only because I like Hottie, like, yeah, you probably suspected that. But I liked several things about the way they handled it and the scenes that he was in. First of all, I liked Katrina powering up the weapons, you know, renewing the enchantments or whatever it was. And mm-hmm. Can I just say that the fact that she ended up with the katana, she...
Oh, we're going on the same train here.
She had such a Michonne feel to her. Like, oh my God.
And then Crane took the crossbow. So we have Daryl and Michonne coming to battle. The Walking Dead, as it were.
I was so disappointed when she blasted undead soldier with a magic instead of hacking him up with the katana, because it was such a lost opportunity. Come on, you do not give a girl katana and have her not use it. I was like, come on, show, you cannot dangle this in front of me and then deny me. It is not a nice thing to do.
Maybe Jenny needs the mid-season break to practice up, because Michonne's had a little bit of time.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will see her with that katana that is supposed to grant whoever's wielding it the strength of all the carriers before. So that would be awesome. I'm just saying.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Yes, it would.
It was perfect. I liked how Hottie was, Doomsday 0 to 10,000, prophecies. And then
being very logical.
Yeah, that made sense. Like, nobody ever, this, it doesn't
hasn't happened
happen.
Yet.
Hasn't happened yet, right? And then we have the rain of blood, hail. it was so brilliant. Okay, I will give you that. I will give you that. And then his easy acceptance of, yes, Abby, I will babysit the headless horseman who's a little tied up right now because the world is ending and obviously you have to go save it. And if you don't, I imagine I will hear about it pretty quickly.
He's been very logical in this episode, just for his short little time in there. He was a nice breath of fresh air in all of this. As we were getting heavier with all of our other characters, he was not light and, you know, like, I've got to get me one of those motorcycles kind of thing, or the charades with the cell phones that we had in the last episode. But he did bring that little breath of fresh air there with the, I'm about to do something less fun, aren't I? And realizing what his place was in all of this. And like you said, his acceptance of Abby saying, I need you to stay here.
While I go save the world. Goes
to save the world. And him being like, yeah, I think if you fail, I'll kind of know.
Mm.
I thought it was a nice moment between the two of them that you could kind of juxtapose with what we have with Abby and Katrina. Not Abby. Katrina and Crane later on.
Yeah.
Where we have that, we have to be soldiers and we can't think of anything else. It was a happier, if you can say happier, version of that same thing. We have to be soldiers. I know my place. I know what I have to do. But
I really, really enjoyed his lack of questioning of Abby. That he did not question that Abby, you know, Abby and Crane and A-Team needs to go do this. I almost expected, because that's what I was used to in all the other TV shows in the history of time. I almost expected him to go, I cannot babysit the headless horseman, I gotta go help you, right? Nah. Hody was more awesome than that. He was just, yeah, okay, I will stay here, stare at the headless horseman in chains, and try not to come up with, you know, puns about that.
Yeah.
I love him so much. He is a part of my shiny, happy place.
It was a really great moment for him, I think, which really only realize, I think, when you talk about it, because, yeah, like you said, he accepted, this is what you need me to do. I get it now. It's hailing blood, and apocalypse could be coming, end of days, and this is what you need me to do.
Mm.
You guys have what you need to do. I don't have to be a part of it. I know what you need me to do. So he was not trying to take that power or be that hero or, I've got this. Like, you could expect in so many other things. He wasn't trying to be Indiana Jones, Han Solo, you know, anything, like charging in and saving the day. So that was good. And he had that trust in Abby that Crane doesn't have in Katrina. Because, you know, one more time back on that, Crane's actually questioning Katrina almost like she has Stockholm Syndrome. You've been with these guys. Yeah. You've been with Headless. You've been with Henry. You're being brainwashed by them. That's why you're doing this. That's why you're, you know, he's not trusting her.
Mm.
And I think with good reason.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he's, you know, blindly not trusting his wife, but he thinks there's got to be an excuse. She's got Stockholm Syndrome. She's being empathetic to them. She's not seeing what I'm seeing. And that just really brings to their break.
But you're going to see it in a way from his perspective. What's more comforting for him? Like, the fact that she might have Stockholm Syndrome, or the fact that she might have actual still feelings for Abraham, right?
Yeah.
So this is, it's easier for him to explain to himself the situation he suddenly is in with Katrina.
Exactly.
This one way, that it's not her, it's something, you know,
right,
Stockholm Syndrome, like, and all that, because I feel that when he was trying to explain it to himself, or you know, in a way he was attacking her, but at the same time trying to find a scenario that would bring his idealized wife, that we were very aware of in season one, a little back, you know, have that ideal Katrina back for one way or another, you know, for a little while, because this human and flawed and, you know, person in front of him did not gel well.
Well, and he sees this now. I love that he finally had that breaking point. Okay, we've talked about this. We just keep coming back to it because it was a really good moment.
But it was a good
when
moment.
He has that breaking point that he brings up Mary. You've lied to me. Look what you did. You know, you've kept things from me. You're not being truthful. And you see this anger come out in him that Abraham helped bring out in the last episode when they were doing their sword fight. And when we see some of the past, you see what he's just been probably putting away in his, you know, proper etiquette from the time. You know, you don't have these outbursts. You don't think this. You put it away and you're very proper and the shoulders are back and you stand tall and you don't do this, you know, stiff upper lip kind of British thing. And it just comes out. And he is now this much grittier, almost American warrior now. He's stripped away this British cold exterior that he had. So maybe he has converted, again, another convert from the British side to the continental side. Now he's on our side as well. It was a very believable moment, I think. And it kind of juxtaposed also with he took so long in admitting that Katrina had these other motives, this other side, something that wasn't, you know, just him. He's not just trying to save her constantly. Juxtapose that with, I don't want to say how readily, but how he was so easy to accept the fact that when Jenny brings up that, so the sword is going to take the life or soul of whoever wields it and kills somebody else. Jenny says, well, maybe somebody whose soul is already promised to someone else.
Hands up, Captain. It's us.
We need you, Frank.
This is it, isn't it?
Warning, listeners, warning. Here it comes. Somebody's soul who's already promised to someone else. Maybe it won't take their soul. Maybe they won't die. And of course, we're talking about, hey, Frank, we need you, Captain Irving. This is it, isn't it? And we're calling Irving back into action. I will say, finally, he is out of Tarrytown. He's not just sitting there. He is now acting instead of reacting, which is a problem that we've had in this season, is our heroes just reacting to Henry and such. He's now being called into action, and I do have to say, he looks good with that sword. Come on, you got to give me that. Irving looked good wielding. Come on,
yes, come on. He did. And when it all started, I mean, when I say it, I mean the thing that happened. When it all started, and when they brought Irving in it, I was thrilled and overjoyed. And oh my God, I could almost hear the angels sing in the background because yes, yes, Irving finally was getting something juicy and he was going to be the action hero that I wanted him to be ever since the season started, right? And it was like, yes, this is the moment when they make up for all the episodes when he wasn't in them and when all he did was arrange meetings between Henry and Ichabod and when all we got of him is him staring it into the distance or into a book or into something because he was so completely, you know, not connected to anything else other than his own misery in Tarrytown.
Or the constant repeats of watching him sign that contract with Henry. That
was there. That was joy. Yeah. It was like, yes, Christmas came earlier. And this is my episode. And as it went, it was amazing because he was badass.
That scene with him and Abraham?
Yes, it was. Like, oh my God, hello, Captain. It almost felt like he was a little unhinged, you know, the way he was handling himself and taking, almost as he was drunk on the power the sword gave him. That's how I saw that scene. Like, he was so drunk on the power he got from the sword that he could barely contain himself, you know. This is me.
Well, I think.
Having the power.
I think all that pent up aggression and everything that he had just been pushing down ever since he admitted to the murder. Well, actually, since his daughter, everything that happened with his daughter, and he's just been pushed down and like Crane made to put all that stuff back. It just came out in such a kick-ass way.
Yeah.
It's just, I loved it.
He just couldn't wait to no longer react to things. I'm going to kind of do a little connection to the way I said that I needed Ichabod and Abby to start acting and instead of reacting before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was Frank's change. Like, this is me finally doing something instead of just, you know, letting things happen to me.
It's his redemption.
Yeah, it was amazing. And when he was fighting the first demon he killed, or, you know, undead soldier, whoever it was like
the
a validation
Dead, yeah.
of the power that he was holding. He would not let the contract with Henry. He would take the contract with Henry and use it against him.
Yeah.
When he killed the horseman or the armor, because he didn't technically kill the horseman of war, but when he struck the armor that Henry was animating, it was like the crown jewel of it all, you know?
It was one that, even like you said, after that first kill that he did, he had this look like as he's kind of turning the sword around, like, this feels good.
Yes.
This, I've been shuttered for so long, and I have been on the sidelines of this fight, you know, really since just before everything happened with his daughter.
Yeah.
You know, he's been on the sidelines and he hasn't been able to be a part of this, but he knows what it means and he's been in the know, and it's like, this feels good. And when he sees Abby get hit in the battle, which that shocked me that Abby actually did get shot, and he sees War come up and you've got Crane ready to go and him going, I got this whole thing.
Yeah, I am going to make them pay. This is
mine. Feel that pain. Yeah, it was so good. Now, I did have to admit I had a flash to Monty Python because it was a whole little Black Knight skit there as we get one leg and then the other. It was such a satisfying battle. I wanted it to last longer, not because it was too short, but because it was too awesome. I really wanted to see Frank have that moment. To just
and I liked that it
really
wasn't too easy for him. That War actually landed some blows, because otherwise I would feel cheated if the ending wasn't the ending that we got, and then I would feel cheated that it was too easy to get rid of War just like that, and it was actual fight with actual, you know, results, and it felt like the victory that he got over War was earned, and he actually made Henry pay for everything that he did to Irving ever since he was introduced, basically.
Yeah, he did a really great job with that. I mean, to the point, I wish he could have seen that Henry was affected, that, you know, while War itself, you know, it's kind of one of those things, the horseman is dead, but he isn't dead, but he is, but he isn't. When Henry's eyes go back to normal and he starts to cry blood, I wish that Frank could have seen that, could have had that moment to see what he's done to this man who's been torturing him with a blood signature. He's brought out that blood. I agree with you. God, I'm just really scared to get to this next part. I agree with you that I'm really glad that it wasn't this easy kill, kind of like dealing with the Walking Dead Continental Army that was coming up, which I have to admit, they must have been on a small budget, because that there should be a lot more undead that came up.
That was not an army.
That was barely a squad. We needed a few more. So maybe that's on the cutting room floor. But I like that when he took that moment and he was battling with War, that first off, he did get hit. So we've had both Abby and Irving have been hit in this war. So I think maybe Abby getting shot and being okay for all intents and purposes. Basically momentarily taken out of the fight. Maybe that made some of us think, okay, well, Irving's been hit, but it's okay. No big deal, because it's just like Abby. He just, of course, you got to draw a little bit of blood in this. And then to see when it's done and he's standing there with Crane and he looks down at his side, and that's when it hits. It's like the energy that he's expended in battling war and getting all of this out and protecting his people and knowing what this meant, he looks down. It was just suddenly all gone. And we have Irving down. Oh, God. Okay. Go ahead.
I am woman enough to admit that it was good TV. Because the urgency of Ichabod and Katrina trying to save him, I felt it. I will not go into...
I was like, where's Leo? Where's Leo?
I will not go into lie.
Sorry.
I cried. Because, and here is what you've been afraid of since we started recording. I hate this. I honestly do. This is me getting attached to a character and this character dying. And this is so not fair. Because this season, he has been a wasted character. And for most of this part of the season, I could not understand for the life of me why he was a serious regular. Because he was barely there. And then he gets, what, 3 episodes and boom, he's done, he's dead. Nuh-uh. You gave screen time to Hori, you gave screen time to Henry, you gave screen time to everybody but Irving, who was such an integral, such an awesome character in season 1. And what? I am, being denied his awesomeness in season 2. And when he finally is awesome, he is killed. And when they showed Abby and Ichabod and Abby, being so devastated that Ichabod had to hold her back, I felt like that. I was Abby in that moment. Because, seriously, guys, if you do not bring him back, like, you did mystical pregnancy on this show. So if you do not use any kind of trope that's overplayed, I don't care. You need to bring Irving back, because if he doesn't come back, I riot. And you do not want to see that. You do not want to see that, because you wasted him. You destroyed his character this season, and I want you to fix it. Seriously. Do it now. And I refuse to talk about it because I'm going to cry.
Well, here's what I think. Is they made enough of a point about the fact that throughout this whole season, not just in this episode, that Irving's soul belongs to Henry. I'm guessing Henry really wrote the contract where it belongs to Henry. Not to Moloch, but to Henry, the Horseman of War. And so his soul is with Henry now. He's on that side. We've seen this vision twice of Irving's vision of the future of this fighting apocalypse. It wasn't what we saw. He was fighting with the Horseman of War, because the Horseman of War was behind him with his flaming sword. And I think that we're not going to show that. We're not going to film that. We're not going to put that in there if we're not going to come back and do it. So I don't see this as, spoiler alert if you haven't watched Walking Dead, what happened in the mid-season finale of Walking Dead, where dead is dead, and we're not getting our sweet little angel back. She's gone. This was someone has fallen, and he can't help but come back with the way, to me, that they've set it up, that Henry has now had this turn. I'm not going to say a 180, maybe just a 90. Maybe we're not going to have just 2 sides anymore. Maybe we're going to have 3. Oh, you're so cute. You're pouting. It's just so sad. This is why I didn't want to end with this. I really see it as how they've set it up, that Irving's got to have this big storyline in the second half, that he is going to be back, that he is going to have that redemption, that hope of real redemption, and he's going to be back, and we're somehow going to see that apocalyptic vision that he saw. Maybe it's not as apocalyptic as we thought back then that it was the end of days. Maybe it's an end of Moloch, a season finale kind of battle. And to me, Irving's not dead yet. He may be, what is it? Is it mostly dead?
Temporary dead.
In Princess Bride? No, mostly dead, I think, in Princess Bride, as opposed to almost dead. Yeah. I think mostly dead, you know, it's, you know. I think it's more that kind of thing. He's down and fallen, but he's not out. He's not dead.
Well, he better not be.
This is not The Walking Dead.
He better not be.
Yeah. I think the whole fact that we have seen how many times Henry has made Irving sign that contract. At least 4 times that we've seen that whole scene with him signing that contract. It wasn't just so that we get the hopelessness of Frank. It was so that we're leaving that clue for you that, guess what? There's an out.
Yeah, but I don't know. This season, it felt like the writers disappointed me so many times that I don't want to hold out hope that not only they will bring him back, but they will do it in a way that will satisfy me. I mean, Andy Irving is a good, and I will be happy to see him. But I also want to have some sort of emotional payout from the plot and from the characters. And if they're going to go with, surprise, he's not dead, Henry's going to bring him back, it's just, I want it to make sense. I want it to be as powerful, as intense as the one scene with Ichabod and Katrina that we spent like 40 minutes talking about, because it was so, so incredible and so powerful and so, and had so many implications and, you know, ripples that came out of it. So
I'm going to pull a line of yours back on you.
No, I will not accept it because it happens. No, they were not allowed to touch Irving.
Know that you're going to trust the writers. We have 7 episodes. You're going to trust the writers. Maybe Hadi will help.
Hadi will help. And you know how he's going to help? By having lots of shirtless photos on Google. Because the moment we stop talking, I will go Google him to Google him. But yeah. I know I used to say that I trust the writers, but I don't, not anymore. This season, I want to trust them, but I am having trust issues, basically. And let's change the subject, please. I'm begging you. I don't want to.
Well, I think somebody else that was having trust issues was Crane, in trusting that Abby had a plan. I like Crane bringing up his, I cannot lose another friend to Moloch. And Abby going, I ain't going out there and sacrificing myself. Here I have a plan, you know, but don't thank me yet because you might not like it. What did you think of our Scooby Gang plan?
Yeah, that really depends because, no, really, every time a plan involves you being restrained in any way, it's not a good plan. Sorry to break it to you, but it's not a good plan if it involves, yeah, and I'm going to get restrained and trust other people to save my ass. No.
I don't think that was the plan. I think it was to get him in there, and then she was hoping that Crane was going to do what he said, and when the moment happened, kill. And then we had the Katrina making Crane pause, the Katrina voice in his head going, but he's our son. And the little pause to get Henry have the upper hand on him.
Well, I kind of...
That's what I took it. Mm-hmm. I took it as their plan was actually to ambush Henry, and then they were going to kill him. And then Crane had that little voice, well, and it just gave Henry the out.
I don't know if I agree.
I don't think the end game was their plan.
No, but that's I think... they had Katrina spell the fake sword into what looked like a, you know, actual sword, right? So their plan involved Henry overpowering them somehow to get his hands on the fake sword. Which implies...
And then right after that is when he got the when Crane got the upper hand on him, but then paused.
Yeah, but for that to happen, for Henry to get his hands on the fake sword, it required, the plan had to account for Abby being somehow overpowered by Henry. And that could have been the roots that, you know, immobilized her, but it very well may have been something a little more deadly. So when your plan involves losing, even fake losing, it's not a very good plan.
Well, but it's because it gets somebody feeling more confident that I've now got the upper hand on you, ha ha ha. And she did say, you know, don't thank me yet, you haven't heard my plan. It's the only plan she could come up with was to lull him into a false sense of security.
I know.
But then her trust in Crane, I think her plan was really good until her faith in Crane actually following through without hesitation.
Mm.
She didn't plan for that hesitation.
Yeah. Well, I also...
And, you know, you do have that fun thing with the whole, you know, you brought roots to a sword fight. Trick sword. You know, we have that little bit there.
Yeah. I also, well, I don't know how I feel the way it all ended up happening.
Well, let's not go there yet. Let's stay in the church for a second. How did you like how Henry turned, quote unquote, his moment of clarity, his moment of pulling on the parental heartstrings Let's talk some John Noble for a second here.
I want to say I enjoyed it, and I did, but I would have enjoyed it more if I didn't see it coming. I mean, the whole, you know, play on... This episode spent way too much time on Henry's perception of Moloch as his father.
And okay, well, it's kind of right in the title.
Yeah, it's... But it's also been something, a theme with Henry through this entire season, right?
Daddy issues, yeah.
So it was kind of the moment Moloch started to disregard Henry's familial.
We're still back in the church, though, with just Henry, Katrina, and Crane.
Yeah, but it kind of plays into everything else. Because Henry was always so firm in his approach to Crane and Katrina, like mocking them for, you know, being so concerned with Henry and trying to make Henry see the love and then see them as family and feel positive emotions towards them, that before he could be given redemption, he had to play on those emotions once again and, you know, twist the knife, so to speak, in their hearts. Like, you think I care? No, I don't. And then, so that everything else that happened later would, I don't know, be emphasized even more, his change of heart even more important or more relevant. But before any kind of redemption could have happened, he had to twist that knife one more time. So I expected the events to play out the way they did. So I enjoyed it because it was amazing work on John Noble. I mean, what else do you expect? John Noble, he delivers every time more what we expect and more from his performances. So it was stunning and genius and brilliant, but I kind of saw it coming. So, you know, I enjoyed it, but I could have enjoyed it more.
I do see what you're saying about the predictability of it and the telegraphing of it. I thought it played really well, though, on that bit of hope that both Katrina and Crane had that maybe he would that there was still there, that maybe they can reach that one grain, even if it doesn't do everything, maybe they can reach that one grain of Crane in him and bring it out. Maybe what they had done was really brilliant. Maybe the fact that you're about to die, you know, self-preservation, maybe that would bring him out. Maybe the whole thing with Abraham earlier in the episode when he did give up the story so easily. I'm like, why is the horseman of death, why is Abraham headless telling them this plan? Why is he spilling it? And like, what, you know, that it seemed a little bit off for me that the horseman of death felt so vulnerable that he had to share that. I'm like, you're a horseman of the apocalypse. But maybe that was part of them then believing Henry in the end there, to the point where Henry then does get the upper hand on him. And so I liked that last bit of hope that he gave both of them, that something was going to happen. Because then when they are tied to the trees, when it is that moment, when it's the four witness, you know, the two witnesses plus our side witnesses here being tied, you know, we've got the family of the witnesses, yeah. You know, it's a happy little family Christmas here. When they're all tied to the trees, it made their despair that much more. We're done. What else are we going to do? Even though they're still hoping. And that moment when Henry is so willing to sacrifice all of them, except of course for Katrina, because she's Abraham's. And where's Abraham? With Hadi. Yeah. He didn't answer his call. Okay, so let's move into the trees and our final thing here. With all of them up there, we have one tree left to burn, and it happens to be the tree that Katrina's on. And Malik, who now for some reason speaks English. We had to read subtitles all the other times. Now somehow Malik can speak English. I don't understand this. Is asking Henry to sacrifice. I know, it's these small little things that get me. Is asking Henry to sacrifice his mother, to do the dirty work and kill her and sacrifice her now because...
For reasons.
Was he talking about the, Abraham, horseman of death, is nothing? Or was he talking about Crane? He is nothing. Sacrifice her now.
I don't know, because what I took from that entire conversation was that they weren't the first horsemen of the apocalypse, then that there were horsemen of death, war, famine, and pestilence before them. I really liked idea, and it took over my mind in that moment, so I have no idea what Malik was saying. I couldn't get over the fact that you're not the first horseman of war, and you will not be last.
Henry has such an idealized view. I mean, he's still, even though he's this 50-something-year-old man, he still has such a child. I mean, I so saw the child in him in this episode with the temper tantrums that he was throwing. And see, Daddy, what I've done for you. Just like we were saying, Crane needed to have that validation about what a horrid sacrifice he was being asked to do. Henry kind of needed the, see, Dad, see what I'm doing? See, look. And thinking that he's special. And he's not. Moloch's coming back and going, whatever, you're just a minion like everybody else. You just happen to have a name. I just happen to have you closer to me than all these other minions. And that look on his face is, like you said, Malik saying, there have been horsemen before you, there'll be horsemen after. That job position is always available. It kind of reminded me, like, very much like in Star Wars when you have the master and the apprentice. It's like, okay, so one of my apprentices dies. Whatever, I'll get another one. You know.
Yeah.
No biggie.
And
I won't cry over you.
Yeah.
You know.
But at the same time, it was Henry, the way they played it, it was Henry had this, like Crane had this idealized version of his wife through season one. Henry had this idealized, in his mind, version of a family. Like, Moloch is the father that I chose, right? And now...
Well, he reborn.
Yeah, and
he,
now
you know.
We... I like the use of we will bring hell on earth. we will be, you know, ruling over the world. We, and it was like we and we and we, and Henry wanted not only to be a part of it, but he wanted to be instrumental part. He wanted to matter, right? Mm-hmm. He is this, basically he is this special snowflake, and like, you know, it can't happen without him. Like, see, Father, what I've done for you so that we can rule. And Moloch was like, I'll find myself another horseman, because why not? You know, it's all about, and Moloch was always me, I will rule the world, I will take over and everything. And I think it was, for Henry, just like for Ichabod, it was better when Moloch was in purgatory, because he didn't have to be faced with the actual, you know, demon and his actual approach to life as we see it, and he could have stayed in this little bubble of we, and we will make it work, you know, we will rock you. So the entire episode, it was the little things that were driving Henry into this final tantrum that ended with him slamming the sword into Moloch. Because it was like, not we, but I. Do what I say, you don't matter, you are nothing but dust under my hooves, so to speak. And then not only Henry, but Abraham. Abraham was promised Katrina. Why is now Moloch, you know, going back on his word? And it was like, what is happening? I do not like it. And the five-year-old starts crying in the middle of a store because he's being denied joy, basically.
Because Moloch has, like you were saying, has this I mentality. It's all for me. I, me, mine. What's my good? And you all just have your parts. And as soon as I'm done with you and your part, you're nothing to me anymore. You are part of a greater plan, but you're not instrumental in that plan. Yeah. Kind of goes back to when several episodes ago, when Moloch really chastised Henry for doing something on his own. I just remember that scene where Moloch's knocking him down. Who said you could think? Who said you could do stuff?
I wanted
you
to
follow
make
along
you proud,
my plan,
Father.
Right.
Do as you're told.
The thing that I took from it was really that Moloch has, this is your destiny. This is fate. This is what you're supposed to do. You do A, B, C, D in order to get to E. And this was the moment when Henry's eyes are open, because Henry's starting to see that Moloch is willing to sacrifice Henry with that whole, yeah, there's going to be other horsemen. Henry finally took the point of free will versus fate.
Mm.
He was supposed to do this. And Moloch is confident and cocky and thinking, well, I have Henry. He's going to do what I want. Even down to when Henry's saying, any man willing to sacrifice his child should die. And he's looking at Crane and he's like, yeah. You keep sticking that to your human father.
Mm-hmm.
And you show him how much you have over him. And Crane is feeling it. I think Crane at that moment felt
shame.
The death of anything that he had for what his son could have been. And like you said, shame for what had occurred, even though, you know, it's like, come on, Crane was dead himself for most of the time. That moment when he's saying that, I think Henry was still maybe teetering with that whole, any man willing to sacrifice his child should die. And then realizing that I'm Moloch's child. Moloch raised me from the dead, and I've been calling Moloch father, and my father is willing to sacrifice me right now for all of this and what I want. He then had that moment of free will and chose to say, and any god, as should any god die, and plunging that sword right into Moloch. Such a powerful moment, I thought. And I wasn't expecting Henry to, I'm not going to say turn good, because I don't think he's turned good.
Hopefully.
I think we now have a three-party system. He's a kind of a rogue now and unpredictable.
Yeah. Well, A, I want him to turn good long enough to give me Irving back. Or, you know, I riot. But in a way, I feel what would be, and if you allow me a moment to put theories and, you know, wishful thinking into it all, I think what would play into Henry's storyline well would be him stepping into Moloch's shoes by trying to live up to his father's mission, so to speak. If you know where I'm going with this, because this is one of the tropes that's very popular in storytelling, where the son character, after the death of his father, steps into his shoes and is faced with all the problems and you know, things that his father wanted to accomplish but couldn't. And his son trying to make it happen. Like, the last thing his father wanted to accomplish, I'm going to get it done. I think it would be, even with his final realization in this episode, I think it would be an interesting way to see his character and to see what he does next and how he approaches the problem of raising hell on Earth without his father, Moloch's, plan to lead him there. What would be his approach? Because at the beginning of the season, when he was in charge, so to speak, you know, throwing Ichabod and Abby off balance and making them, forcing them to react to what he was doing, it was brilliant. So I would really want to see him being the bad guy, like the ultimate bad guy. And obviously, he would need another Horseman of War, because he kind of got promoted. But it would be interesting, because I know they, from the clip that you played, that redemption is part of Henry's plot and storyline and the way they want to develop this character. But I think it would be better, and the show and the character would benefit from it more, if it wasn't a straight and narrow path. Like,
yeah, I don't think it will be.
Yeah, but hey, I had this revelation, so now I will slowly work my way towards being better. No, I want it to be, I had this revelation, but I still want to raise hell on Earth. It's just not we will rule the world, it's I will rule the world.
He needs to be careful of, because it's that I, me, mine that got Moloch in trouble. And come on, it was right there in Moloch's name. It's used in English literature to refer to a person or thing demanding or requiring a very costly sacrifice. Come on, Henry, it was right there. Don't, you're a student of all this. I think that John Noble is very right in saying that it would be a very boring character if there was no possibility of hope. That doesn't mean, like you were saying, that he should just, yay, it's all going to be happy and daisies and bunnies and kittens and,
yeah,
we're all going to live happily ever after. I think it's going to definitely play into that whole Irving's vision, because Irving has that vision with Henry, and the vision is this apocalyptic kind of thing with fire and battles, and who you saw in that vision was Irving and the Horseman of War, which is Henry. And I don't know if Moloch is gone, or just banished back to hell, purgatory, whatever, but now he doesn't have Henry as a minion to help him get out. So I'm not sure where that leaves Moloch, because it's not like you can totally get rid of this fallen angel.
Yeah.
I think. But I'm thinking that you're right, that we're going to have it where Henry is going to rise in some way, either taking over for Moloch or his own, like I said, maybe his own kind of third party system. Yeah, I don't want Moloch's, I don't want the Cranes, I want my own version. And I happen to already have a soldier in my pocket with Frank. So I think that's how Frank's going to come back, and we are going to see that fire raining on Sleepy Hollow, Terrytown, that we had the visions of. I think it opens up some really great possibilities, because the thing that we've complained about with Henry was everything was very personal for him. He's going straight for his parents. Now he's also against Moloch. What Moloch represented.
Yeah.
Because Moloch was willing to sacrifice him. So I think that's a very powerful aspect of it too, is he's really rogue. He's not on anybody's side but his own.
Mm. Yeah.
So I think that'll make an interesting story for him, where he's not just trying to figure out how to best the Cranes, and is going to become a bigger threat than he was before.
Mm. That's going to be interesting to see what they do with his character and where they go with... Well, they have 7 episodes left, so... It's
7 episodes in the season, so
It's only just beginning. Well, not beginning, but they do not have a lot of time to make it worthwhile, you know, and make it up to me.
Well, it may all be just beginning for Henry and for them, but for us, it is ending, because this is already yet another really long podcast. We will be back during the mid-season break to talk kind of some more generalities about this whole season, maybe where we hope it's going to go, where we are afraid it's going to go, and, you know, talking about some more Hottie and Ichabod to make us happy.
Yes.
We need those
shiny, happy place.
Place moments. Like I said way back at the beginning, don't forget to follow Sci-Fi for Chicks on Twitter and subscribe to us on iTunes. Go over to scififorme.com and read Alex's posts on the show, as well as everybody else's posts. You know, just read ours first, because we're the coolest. And check out our new site, because we have done some new things there. We're all fancy schmancy now. Alex, I will see you at some point during this holiday season.
Yes, after I can talk about the show without getting irritated and frustrated and needing, you know, to drink copious amount of alcohol.
Well, you can still drink copious amounts. That's fine. We're also going to be starting our feminism series, which Alex is going to be heavily involved
yet
in.
Yet another
so keep
reason
an eye out
for me
that
to rant. Aren't you excited?
Oh, don't tell him that. I was trying to get him all happy about this. So check that out on Sci-Fi for Chicks, and let us know what you're thinking of Sleepy Hollow so far. Thank you so much for joining us. Alex, have a great holiday in case I don't talk to you, although I'm sure I will, but just in case.
Fine, you too.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Happy holidays to all of you, or Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, if you don't like the general kind of greeting. We will catch you in 2015, if not before. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of scififorme.com. Copyright 2014 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.